If only you could smell the corn dogs, the corn and funnel cakes. Today's 21st is live from the State Fair.
What a great day. One of the great days of the year. The opening of the Illinois State Fair. Let's hear it for the fair.
That's Governor Rauner opening up the festivities for this 160th year. We'll find out what $30 million in improvements have brought. Not that you need any money for this fair classic.
Piggy, 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 piggy. Ooh-wee. Suey, suey.
Chris Carr is a 10-time State Fair champion for hog calling. He joins us to talk about this annual ritual and how the fair helps us non-farmers understand where our food comes from. And we've got two blondes and a redhead. One of them is a dog. The others are hypnotists who will join us for some mind games. That's all coming up after the latest news, the 21st, live from the State Fair. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and if you can't tell by these sounds in the background, we're live from the State Fair today. Specifically, we're next to the agriculture tent. We're in the ag media tent. There's lots of folks that we have that we're going to introduce you to today. I've already had my fried donuts. We are going to be talking to some folks that make fried brownies. We've got some farmers that are going to be joining us. We're also lots coming up this hour live from the State Fair. First, though, I'm joined by Luke Saylor, who's the Illinois State Fair Manager, and Raymond Poe, the Director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Gentlemen, welcome to the 21st, and thanks for having us here today.
Hey, no, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So let's just start with, Luke, how the fair's gone so far this year.
It's really been fantastic. We are, you know, it's Thursday here at the Illinois State Fair, so still have another day and the weekend to go before we conclude the 2018 State Fair. Weather's been in our favor so far, so we're hoping that the rest of the time stays that way, but it's been a great celebration so far.
And for those of you who haven't had a chance to come down to Springfield for the fair, we're hoping to give you a little bit of a taste today. Director Poe, how important is the fair to introducing maybe non-farm folks to the farm world and to the ag world?
You know what, and what people don't realize, agriculture is the biggest industry in Illinois. 24.5% of the economy revolves around that, and we want to introduce people, like you say, and figure out that when they go to the grocery store, don't grow there. And we want to show them how it's growing. We want to show them how we harvest it, and we want to make sure they come and see some of the livestock and where their baking's coming from. So it's a real education process.
That's Director Raymond Poe. Luke Saylor's with us as well. Luke, so this is the 160th State Fair on the state's 200th birthday. What's the theme this year?
So our theme this year is Celebrate Illinois 200 Years of Amazing. It's the 166th actual State Fair, but as you said, the state's 200th birthday. So with this being the state's bicentennial, it's just a wonderful time to celebrate Illinois and everything Illinois has to offer. As Director Poe said, with agriculture being our number one state's industry, you know, the bicentennial motto is born, built, grown. And that mantra goes, you know, so perfectly with what Illinois agriculture is, as everything's born, built, grown here in Illinois. So it's just a great time for the fair to be a showcase of such a large industry for all of Illinois, and something to be proud of.
And Luke, not just agriculture, there are wineries here. There's lots of other folks. Can you give us a sense of the variety that's here at the fair?
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of it. People don't realize that there's Illinois wine. But Illinois wine is part of Illinois agriculture. So, you know, that's kind of a fun thing that people don't realize is that, you know, grapes are grown. So we have Illinois wine, we have Illinois beer, we have, you know, numerous food vendors, we have all sorts of things. As you said, the mini donuts, you know, there's something truly for everyone here at the State Fair.
Director Poe, as we're thinking about the fair and the fairgrounds and renovations, where are we at with improvements? I think those of us who followed particularly the state budget impasse have also followed some challenges the fairgrounds have had in regards to renovations. How have things gone so far this year?
Well, I think this is a plus, and I think that's why Luke and I is excited, because you're finally seeing some things happen. It's been decades. It's probably been 30 years since there's been a capital budget, a major capital budget in the state of Illinois. And thank God we got a governor that loves the fair. He's out here every day. And when he did put $30 million in the budget this year for capital improvements, then he's taken some action on some emergency money for different facilities like the MPA, the Coliseum, and we got some emergency roof thing, you know, projects going on. And probably if you've been to the fair, the roads has been terrible, and we got three new roads, which we're going to replace all of them. So, no, it's going to go well. And And we're going to, I think we got like 165 buildings and probably need 120 roofs. And that money will go to fix a lot of that, fix the roads. And we got the Coliseum and the MPA that we're going to make sure we want to get go back up to running. The Coliseum should be open for the 19 fair. And the next year, we're going to spend $7.5 million to renovate it. We've already had the architects and engineering done. So after the fair and before the end of the year here, we're hoping you can start seeing some things happen at the Coliseum.
And, of course, yesterday, Governor Rauner and his wife announced a donation of $1 million towards the restoration of the Coliseum. The building was closed. It was public safety concerns. It was closed in about 2016. So you think by next year, you're hoping that the Coliseum will be back open?
We've actually, with the CDB and all the governors on board, and with the bonding, we're sure that that Coliseum will be open in phase one for 19. And then there is a phase two, and we're going to go ahead and fix that up. And that's the nice thing about the governor's donation. Maybe we can do some extra things because we'd like to air condition and heat that eventually. So those are the kind of things that we can do with some extra money.
Director Poe, can you remind us of the historic nature of that building, of the Coliseum, how long that's been around?
It's over 100 years old. And believe it or not, anybody that shows horses around the United States, you know how you talk about building a resume? If you want the Illinois State Fair in the Coliseum, you put that right on your resume because that's one of the premier spots in the United States.
I wanted to ask you also, as director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture, we were chatting before the show about the rain that we had in Champaign County last night. I just wanted to ask you, as we are in August now, how you would characterize how this year has gone for Illinois farmers.
In general, they're very positive. And like Luke can attest, there is some of them dry pockets. But, you know, we do a lot of things. We monitor all the chemicals. Actually, the Department of Ag is 90% regulatory. And I think just in education last year, we had about 11,000 people was educated by the industry and the Department of Ag and the ULI to make sure we're getting these chemicals sprayed on right.
Okay. Well, that's Raymond Poe, who's the director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture. I want to thank you, along with Luke Saylor, manager of the Illinois State Fair. Gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us on. Appreciate it.
As we're talking about farming, I want to go to our next guest, who's a 10-time State Fair champion winner as a hog caller. He's a Champaign County farmer. He farms on about 2,200 acres. He's got corn and beans in Champaign and Piatt County. Chris Carr, welcome to the 21st. Thank you to come all the way down to Springfield to talk to us.
Thank you for him having me down. I really enjoy coming down.
Now, first, how many years have you been coming to the State Fair, Chris?
Well, we started showing hogs 27 years ago, our kids. We were 4-H leaders, my wife and I. Our kids showed Durocs down here at the State Fair. And that was the year, 27 years ago, that I started calling hogs in the middle weekend, which started a tradition. And that's kind of where we are today.
Now, you mentioned 4-H. Later, I want to talk to you about the work you do with particularly agriculture literacy with kids. But let's stick with the hog calling for a minute. First of all, for people, there might be people who are listening who don't know what hog calling is, Chris.
Well, hog calling, let's go back way back in time. Our grandfathers, maybe forefathers in agriculture, traditional hog call would have been where you called the hog or the cow in from the field, in from the pasture to eat. So we would call hogs, and they would have different ways of calling them. So suey, suey, or porky, or, you know, porry. But you know, over the years, people have asked me, as we talk about hog calling, does a hog come to you? Well, I respond by that and saying animals respond to voice command. So, yes, it's an entertainment mode here at the State Fair for many people that come and listen to the hog calling, and it's a lost art. The lost art part of it is that when those farmers called the cow and they expected the cow and the hog to come to the barn to feed him once a day.
And do you feel like when you say it's a lost art, I wonder, when did you first start doing hog calling?
I, as a 9-year-old boy in 4-H, I started showing at the Champaign County Fair 60 years ago. So you can figure out real quick how old
okay.
I am. So that's when I started calling hogs. And we actually picked ears of corn and threw over the fence from the first 3 or 4 rows in the field and fed the hogs that way.
Okay.
I've been doing this a long, long time.
And does everybody, I imagine this is a very, it's a real personal thing in terms of how you come up with what you're going to say and the manner in which you're doing this hog calling.
Over the years, the hog calling that I've done, I have tried to tie it sometime to the theme of the Illinois State Fair. So many years have been celebrate and educate. So I was able to create some skits to do that. And just this last Sunday, I called a pig on a ham radio high frequency.
Just say that again, a ham radio. I want to make sure everyone got that.
Okay. So we got that out of the way, and now we're going on. So,
can you give us an example of, I think, of what kind of calls you would do?
I would call for competition's sake. I would start out and go into the, you know, Suey, you know, you want me to do it real loud right now?
Yeah, you want to do
suey,
it? Okay.
Suey, piggy! Pig. That's the hog calling from a traditional competition standpoint.
And then what's real-life hog calling look like then?
Well, again, as I said a while ago, animals will respond. If you have a dog or a cat or a horse or a cow or any pet and you feed them every day, they're going to respond to your call.
No matter what you say.
That's right. You know what? People might not even admit that they talk to animals, but I will guarantee you they do.
We've got lots of animals that are coming on the program today. We've got a couple dogs that are waiting to join us. So we're going to be talking to lots of animal lovers today. Chris, going back to winning and being a champion hog caller, what goes into that? How much practice goes into being a champion hog caller?
Well, I don't know that it requires a lot of practice. I'm involved in a lot of different things, and I guess you just start out. And again, if you have a perception that it's entertainment, you try to change different ears and try to make different sounds so that it'll entertain or be louder. Probably the crowd. You have to get the crowd into the theme. So in a few seconds, you have to have the crowd know what you're doing.
Can you do that for us now?
Well, as far as the hog calling.
Sure.
Again, like I said, suey, piggy. The point I made Sunday in this last Sunday's hog call was that, you know, years ago, amateur radio was used to communicate. Well, I brought into the idea that a different way to communicate would be if you can't call a hog on a ham radio, and it didn't work out too good for me, then you call it like the old traditional hog calling, and I did that.
I'm speaking with Chris Carr. We're live from the Illinois State Fair. He's a hog caller. He's a farmer. He's also chair of Earth Partners, which is an ag literacy program for Champaign County. You're chairman of this organization, Chris. We heard Director Poe talk about how important it is at the State Fair to introduce agriculture and the concept of farming to maybe the non-farm community. First of all, what does ag literacy mean when we're thinking about what you are introducing to the kids?
Well, I think ag literacy in Champaign County, you know, our mission, if you want to call it that, through the foundation, is to educate the kids and basically the future of food and agriculture industry. So we want to connect them from kindergarten all the way up to the consumer and tell our story about agriculture. Mainly we want to tell them and educate them through these different programs, where does the food come from? So in that regard, we don't tell the kids what to eat. Don't get me wrong. We want them to understand through math, science, English, language arts, and social studies. We have classroom activities that we can tie all of that together and then use some really neat hands-on stuff in the classroom. In this case, we saw 15,000 kids in Champaign County schools last year. And in doing that, we had a whole bunch of kids and teachers took advantage of these educational ways to get to the kindergarten kids, fourth grade kids, and so forth.
And Chris, what do you find, in particular with younger kids, as you're talking about kindergartners or fourth graders, kids who are growing up in towns, are they familiar with when you say where our food comes from? Do you think that kids these days, or we were talking about this before the show, even adults, do you think we have enough familiarity with where our food is coming from?
No, we don't. And that's our goal, is to educate and show. Now, you and I talked about an example in the classrooms in Champaign. I think we had 27 incubators in schools in Champaign County last year. And that means the little baby chicks were hatched. And these kids, if you want to see a reaction, these kids saw that happening.
Get to seeing a baby chick being
born. Oh, my goodness sakes. And that's just how, you know, you just, that's just a one little part of this whole thing. So they really got excited about that. And we have opportunities to keep showing them different things about soil and in the classroom and putting on demonstrations through volunteers. I don't want to forget about the volunteers. It's amazing. We have several hundred volunteers in Champaign County, and we want to thank them for that, tying the ag literacy, ag in the classroom, using their experience, their career, to relate to and pass this educational thing through to the kids.
And I imagine part of this is also not just educating children on where our food come from, but also helping maybe create the next generation of farmers. You all offer scholarships as well?
Yes. Yes, we also do that. We offered last year, I think we had 54 scholarships. Our foundation has created a, through the endowment, and thank you, you know, all of those people that have set up endowments to basically just contribute to their education. We give $1,000 scholarships for kids in Champaign County going to any college, and we continue to support that through a gala, through a fundraising, and then our small Earth Partners in the spring collecting money from local businesses to support Ag in the Classroom.
That's Chris Carr. He's chairman of Earth Partners, and we've been talking not just about their ag literacy programs that he does in Champaign, but also about his past as a Hog Call Hall of Famer from Champaign County. Hey, Chris, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
And we just heard one of our next guests on the show barking. He's going to be coming up later on in the hour. We're live from the State Fair. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. The 21st live from the State Fair. We are broadcasting from the Ag Media tent today. Thanks to the Illinois State Fair for hosting us. As you can hear the music going on in the background, there's always a lot of things to do with the fair. We've been talking about agriculture. There's lots to eat. We're going to get to that later in the hour, but there's also lots of the entertainment at the fair, and that's who's with me now. Kenda Summers and Anna Rose Anderson are two blondes and a redhead. They do a mentalism and hypnosis show here at the State Fair. They travel. Do you ladies travel? Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much for having us.
Do you ladies travel not just all over this country? Kenda, you're Canadian. Do you do
I'm
this
Canadian.
You,
yeah.
all over North America?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done quite a few shows in Canada before I saw the light and headed over here to the U.S.
And so I should mention, we have Kenda and we have Anna Rose. Those are our blondes. Our redhead is Stelly, who's
Stelly,
sitting on your lap.
The golden in transit.
Can Stelly say hi? We heard her barking before. I don't know if she's... Is she too quiet?
Speak.
There we go. Thank you. She's really well trained. First of all, can you tell us a little bit? People might be thinking mentalists, hypnotists. What do they do? Anna Rose, what is what you all do?
Okay, so we do both mentalism and hypnosis, and Kenna's going to talk about the hypnosis, but I'll talk about the mentalism just to keep everything organized. But mentalism, it's all about mind reading, telepathy, being able to interpret messages without people actually saying them out loud, so making a lot of predictions, and then also reading body language. So it's a really fun way. It involves a lot of comedy too, so we get a bunch of people coming up and being involved in our show, which is really fun. So we have active participants, and it's super fun, it's funny, and it's mind-blowing, to say the least. And so Kenda can talk about the hypnosis too. Maybe?
And
or do
Kenda,
you want me to talk about it?
Kenda, can you? Well, I wanted to ask you all, your goal, I know, is to put on family-oriented shows.
Absolutely.
That are tailored to the audience. What does that look like at a state fair?
What does that look like? Well, we stay away from any kind of adult content. The fair is a place for the family to come out and have some fun and have some laughs. The cool part about involving the dog in our act is the kids love the dog. We also have an aspect of our show where we bring the really teeny tiny little kids up in both the mentalism and the hypnosis show where they can get involved. Because sometimes kids that are 3 and 4 years old, they don't get a chance to participate in a lot of events because they're too little. But we have a unique way of involving them in both our mentalism and our hypnosis show. So they get to have fun as well.
And what are you hypnotizing people of? What do you do?
With our hypnosis shows, well, you know what? We always let the audience and the people on stage dictate what's going to happen.
Okay. Really, what does that mean?
So then, it depends on who we have up there. Two days ago, we had the former State Fair director, Kevin Gordon,
he was
on
so
stage.
Good.
He rocked the stage. Good. So we created a whole show around him because he was just a rock star. There are certain people that just, they're so good when they're hypnotized, and he was one of the individuals that was.
So how do you hypnotize people? Is that a trade secret
people?
That you can't share with us?
No, we actually love talking about this because there's a huge misconception about hypnosis. See, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. We just guide it. So we actually can't make you do anything you don't want to do. So we have people up there and we allow them and guide them into their own self-hypnosis. Would you say that, Kenda?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a natural occurring phenomenon, and that's why people get a little bit freaked out. They're going, hypnosis, what
well,
the heck is that?
When you say it's naturally occurring, do you mean it's, how would you, is it a venue you think it's just suggesting behavior for
yes.
yourself?
Yes.
Is that essentially what it is?
Well, yeah. let me involve you upon that a little bit further.
Unpack.
As
that.
A child, were you told that you can't go outside and play unless you eat everything on your plate?
Sure.
So we tell people that the oldest hypnotists in the world
are parents.
We're our parents. Yes. Absolutely.
Totally.
You're watching television and all of a sudden a Ford truck commercial comes on. Your neighbor has a Ford truck. All of a sudden you're going out and you're buying a Ford truck. Media plays a big role. We just don't call it hypnosis.
Totally.
But it's happening all around us.
How did you all end up in this line of work, Anna Rose?
I like to call it fate. I live in Iowa. There's not too much, especially hypnosis and entertainment going on there. But I was sitting, getting my hair highlighted in a salon, and I look over at the chair next to me, the dryer next to me, and in that chair was a hypnotist who I've known who has been doing shows for 30 years, 200 shows a year, and I looked at him and I'm like, well, you're stuck under the dryer too, and so am I, and you're not leaving here, and you're going to leave here today, and you're going to train me in hypnosis. So I did a mentorship with him for about a year, and so I was super lucky, and that's kind of how I got involved in it.
And Kenda, do you all travel all over the country?
All over the place. We're actually being looked at next year for the Ottawa exhibition for 2019. So that will be in Canada. So yeah, we go all over the place.
And is it normally at state fairs?
This is the first state fair we've done, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
Before this, we did Mercer County Fair, we did Fulton County Fair, we did Green Lake, Wisconsin, we did Dubuque County Fair. So we're here for 10 days, and then we're on to Des Moines State Fair for 10 days.
And how are they different, the state fairs and county fairs? Do you find they're different depending
on location?
Well, the
state fair is obviously huge.
It's so much
huge.
Bigger.
Yes, yes. This one in particular, I believe the attendance is 500,000 people that
That's
come
amazing.
Here.
Amazing, yeah.
So it's a lot bigger than some of the smaller ones.
And would you say it's a different energy that comes from having bigger crowds come through here?
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? Some of those little county fairs can absolutely rock too.
Yeah.
It's all what we put out. You're going to get what you put out, you know?
And why do you have a dog that's part of your act?
She is the entertainment aspect of it. When we take her to the fair conventions, she's noticed. Every act should have a USP, which is a unique selling point, and she's that unique selling point. And it's fun for the kids. It's fun for the people to see an animal that's performing.
Ah, all right. So do you have any advice for folks as you're thinking about the idea of hypnosis or mentalism? I bet there are kids who are listening out there who I feel like lots of children go through phases, Anna Rose, where they want to become mentalists, they want to be magicians or do tricks. What advice do you have
okay,
for that?
Okay, so this is actually fun. So when I became a hypnotist, this is my full-time job, and I graduated from college last year, so from Loras College in Dubuque. And in the course of a month...
What was your major?
International studies.
Okay, so not...
Nothing to do with this at all.
Okay.
But I had... I had a guy that I was into tell me that it was a bad idea. I had one of my college professors tell me it was a bad idea. And then I had my grandmother, who's 90 years old, tell me that I should get an actual career. Okay, all in the same month. And I think the biggest lesson is to, no matter what people tell you to do or what not to do or whatever, do what you want. Do what you want to do. And, you know, I'm having a great time, and I can sure as heck tell you that my professor and that guy that I liked, and even my own grandma, who I still love very much, they're wrong, because my job's awesome. So for all the advice for all the people out there who are kind of defining their path right now in their life and figuring out what you're going to do, you know, you have something. Listen to your heart, your head, and your gut, because when all those are aligned, don't care what anybody else has to say. So it's totally doable. I did it.
Well, ladies, thanks for that. Thanks for your advice. If you are at the State Fair, they are performing this afternoon. You all, I know, are performing right next door to us.
12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5:30, and 7:15.
And tomorrow as well?
Right through till Sunday.
All till Sunday, yeah.
All right, so you can catch Two Blondes and a Redhead's Mentalism and Hypnosis Show. I want to thank Kenda Summers and Anna Rose Anderson and Stelly.
And Stelly.
For being with
me. Chilling.
Ladies, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having us. Really
appreciate
it. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So there's all the fun stuff we've been talking about at the fair. And, of course, one of the biggest draws is the food. And that's my next guest is Norman Keene with Paulette's Food Service in Pinckneyville. Hey, Norman. Thanks for being here. Welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
So now your wife, Paulette, was one of the two co-winners of the Golden Abe's Fantastic Fair Food Competition for her turtle funnel cake.
Yes, she was.
Now, this is the first time there were two winners. How do you all come up with a prize-winning funnel cake food for the fair?
Well, my wife is pretty creative, and she's kind of the rock of this company. And she invents all this stuff on her own.
Okay.
So.
And so does she practice? Does she come up with this during the year? Does she think about test? Does she test things out on you?
No.
No, she does not?
No, she just tests it with the customers.
Ah, okay. And now you all have, you're selling funnel cakes here at the fair.
Right.
And what do you all do when the fair isn't on? Are you selling at county fairs?
We go to county fairs and festivals, and we're going to do corn after this, and she just left for Louisville, Kentucky this morning, which I got back from there yesterday.
Wow. So is this summer a really hectic time of year for y'all?
This month of August is really busy.
Okay.
And then we have another daughter and grandson that's in Pinckneyville at the American Threshers Association.
And how did you all get into doing this?
Well, her grandfather started it up, I don't know how many years ago. And then I worked at the coal mine, and coal mine laid off. Closed. So she said, well, we'll do this for a while, but I don't want to do it for the rest of my life. So 36 years later and 12 trailers, here we are.
Well, you all must certainly enjoy it, I imagine.
Well, it used to be fun. Now I'm getting too old.
Oh, no. I think when people come to the fair, they want to eat funnel cakes. What do you want them to know about what goes into all of that?
Well, that's a secret recipe. We can't give that out.
Oh, no, I just mean all the work that you all do behind the scenes.
Well, getting them here, and we clean them, take everything out every setup day, and clean them from one end to the other. And then we have to order stock, and our biggest problem right now is the help. We can't seem to find too many people that really want to do this.
To help out
right.
at the fair.
Yeah, to work, yeah.
And is that something that's been harder in the past couple of years, or has that always been a challenge
for
you?
Yeah, the last couple of years is getting pretty rough at that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, and you have your family that's helping out now.
Yeah, all of my kids are in it but one, and she's a pharmacist, so I salute her for that. Yeah.
Okay. And Norman, do you like to eat funnel cakes, or do you get kind of sick of them at this point?
I like them. Last year, she invented the strawberry shortcake funnel cake, and that is really good. She won second place last year.
And so the strawberry, it sounds self-explanatory, but can you tell us what was in it?
Well, it's just a regular funnel cake with powdered sugar, and she puts fresh strawberries and whipped cream on it.
And this year, the turtle funnel cake, I imagine that involves caramel?
That and fudge, yeah.
And fudge. Mm-hmm. And are there nuts as well?
I suspect if you want it on there, they will put it on there for you, yeah.
And do you find that your customers have come up with more creative ideas also of what they want on their funnel cakes?
Yeah, there's a lot of them that have put everything they can get on them.
Okay. Well, that's Norman Keene. He's with Paulette's Food Service in Pickneyville. Hey, Norman, thanks for taking the time. I know this is a really busy time of year for you.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate you coming down.
Okay, thank you.
So at the State Fair, of course, we've got, because it's Illinois, we have Abraham Lincoln who is joining us. We're going to start with talking to Randy Duncan, who was an Abraham Lincoln presenter. Chris Carter's also with us. Hi, hey, guys. How are you doing?
Everything's wonderful. Thank you. It's great to be at the fair.
Randy, can I just start by asking, first of all, how one becomes a Lincoln, and I imagine you prefer the term presenter?
Yeah, that's rather, right.
Okay.
How would you become a presenter? Well, I've told folks in the past that I haven't always looked like Lincoln, but as I got a little older, I became more and more and more honest, and gradually I just developed... No, probably like a lot of people, I kind of backed into it. I got invited to do this at one event, and it took off from there. It was just as a lark, and people said, "Oh my gosh, that was pretty good." And so then I had to start getting the outfit right, the voice right, the history. And do that, and to get it right, to do the man justice. Because if you're going to represent a fellow, you really need to do it properly and to have respect for the man, because he's not here to defend himself.
That's Randy Duncan, who is a Lincoln presenter who was here. Sarah Watson is the lady who's made probably I think you might be the most popular guy here at the fair, right? She's the executive director of Looking for Lincoln in the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area. Sarah, how many people come to the fair and sort of expect to see an Abraham Lincoln presenter here?
You know, I don't know that anybody expects it, but I think it's a delightful surprise. The greatest thing at the fair for me is to watch people's faces when they see Lincoln, because the smiles, the excitement, and it helps bring that history to life a little bit. So it's just kind of a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Randy, do you get approached more by kids who say, "Are you President Lincoln?"
Well, it runs the gamut. There are grown-ups who bring their children or grandchildren. There are one of the most special times is whenever a little kid comes up and is giving me a leg hug. You know, they're just so sweet. And the grown-ups want to ask hard questions sometimes too.
Like what?
Oh, well, presidential-related questions, like things related to the presidency.
So do people try to stump you with presidential history questions?
Oh, yes. At the museum here in town, the Presidential Museum here in town.
The Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Museum?
There was a group of boys who had run off, and they were looking all through the museum, and then they'd come back with something. They'd say, "What about?" And I'd answer it, and they'd go, "Darn." And then they'd run back and they'd go, yeah.
So do you also work at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Library?
At times, yes.
Okay. And when folks are here at the fair, Sarah, where can they find you all in the Looking for Lincoln tent? Because we're going to talk about that in a minute
as
well.
Yes, we're on the lawn of the Illinois building. And we bring people like Randy as Lincoln and Chris as a broommaker to help bring that history to life. So the lawn of the Illinois building is the place to come and see history in action.
Sarah Watson's with us. She's executive director of Looking for Lincoln. Sarah, what is that?
Looking for Lincoln is, well, we're a not-for-profit. We are the coordinating entity for the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area.
You know what, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Sarah Watson. We are live from the State Fair talking about Lincoln. Stay tuned. We'll continue this conversation just after the break. Thanks for tuning in to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. If you can hear that music in the background, today we are live from the State Fair. We hope we've been giving you a taste of everything at the State Fair. If you haven't been able to come on down in Springfield, we've talked to the Illinois Department of Agriculture, a champion hog caller, and learning a little bit about the ag side. We've had some fun with some hypnotists and learned a little bit more about food with some of the prize-winning funnel cake recipes. Now we're talking about history at the fair. You can find out the life, more about the life and times of Abraham Lincoln. It comes to live on the lawn in front of the Illinois building that's just inside the main gate. They've got free living history programs and performances. I'm speaking right now to the executive director of Looking for Lincoln in the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area, Sarah Watson. We have Mr. Lincoln, the president himself, is here. Randy Duncan is helping us bring him to life. Chris Carter's also with us as well. We're going to talk about broom making in just a second. Sarah, just before the break, you were explaining a little bit about Looking for Lincoln.
Yes, and what I was starting to say is that we are the coordinating entity for the Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area, one of 49 federally legislated heritage areas throughout the country. So we have legislation that mandates that we help preserve and tell the story of the life and times of Abraham Lincoln in 42 counties of central Illinois. So we come to the fair to help share that story.
And I think lots of people tend to think about Abraham Lincoln. Of course, the Presidential Library and Museum is here in Springfield. What do you want people to know about Abraham Lincoln's presence outside of Springfield?
That he really, yes, he lived his much of his time in Springfield, but when you look at his legal career and his political career, it took him far beyond Springfield. And so the heritage area is really those 42 counties where it's really well documented that he spent time in and learned to be that man who became president.
Randy Duncan, who is our Lincoln presenter, who's here, do you have a favorite bit of Lincoln history that's your personal favorite?
One of my favorites is whenever he was defending a woman who was accused of murdering her husband, and she almost certainly did do that from the evidence, but the reason that she had done it was because her husband was so seriously abusive that was her only way of protecting herself. And whenever the day came for the trial, she wasn't there.
Where was his trial? It was in Charleston?
And so when the day came for the trial, everybody was there except his client. She wasn't there. And the judge called him up to the bench and said, Lincoln, where's your client? And he said, Your Honor, I have no idea where she is. And he said, well, last time you saw her, what did she say? And he said, Your Honor, she said that she is powerful thirsty and can really use a good drink of water. And, Your Honor, I told her that I had heard tell that they have some really good water to drink in Tennessee. And, Your Honor, I opened the window there and I left the room and I ain't seen her since.
Did that really happen?
It really happened.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. What did the judge say?
Well, there was nothing that could be done. There was nobody there to convict. And I think the last I understood that she was in California someplace. She had just made up a new life.
Wow.
But
now,
of course, that was at a time in our nation's history where that was possible. You couldn't be tracked from one end of the country to
the
other.
Right. California was pretty far from Illinois at that point in time. Chris Carter's also with us. Chris, you are a broom maker here with us looking for Lincoln. Why are we using broom making as an example or helping us learn a little bit about our history?
You can say broom making is one of the first tools to mankind because it's been around for not just centuries but millennia. And you can trace it all the way back from era China all the way over to Ireland. Here in the Americas, each culture takes on their own type, their own way, but they all have a central theme. It's made for cleaning. It's made for as a tool. And that's where you can find where most of our original tools are made of.
And so you mentioned to me before that broom making is not just something that involves weaving, but also blacksmithing.
Oh, yes. Everything you weaving, sewing, blacksmithing, binding, it's really all involved because not only are you putting something together, you are making the tools to put that item together.
And what do you hope people will get out of your demonstrations that you're doing?
A sense of history and a sense of understanding that even though We've come so far into the future. Our what we have here in the future still reaches back to the past and reminds us who we were and how we got there.
And President Lincoln or Randy Duncan, as we think about that, I wonder, as you think about President Lincoln in this state's bicentennial year, I think we're going to hear a lot about the president. You shared your favorite story. Are there any other stories of President Lincoln that you think are particularly appropriate as we think about Illinois' bicentennial?
Well, especially at the state fair, I see a lot of children here, and it makes me think about the way the president and Mrs. Lincoln parented their own children, which was with an extremely free rein. They let them get away with practically everything. If those children were here, they would be running all over the place. They wouldn't know where their own children were most of the time, and they would be having a grand time getting themselves all hot and sticky and That's
free range parenting. That's the 19th century version of free range parenting, yeah. Right? Yeah. I want to thank Randy Duncan for being with us, a Lincoln presenter, Chris Carter, a broommaker, Sarah Watson, who's executive director of the Looking for Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln National Heritage Area. The Life of Times of Abraham Lincoln have come to life. If you come to the fair, they're just at the lawn in front of the Illinois building, just inside the main gate. All of their free living history programs and performances. Guys, thanks for being here with me.
Thank you.
We tried to give you all a sense of the state fair, and we wanted to end today with my final guest, who's Luke Reinhold, and he is in the conservation world area of the fair. He's actually the CEO of Vet Liaison and Dogs That Help, and he's here with his dog. It's Nita Dubois. Is that right?
Yes.
And like most there, I was going to say, she's so well-trained. She's very quiet, actually, right? We're not going to really hear from Nita. She's sitting next to you. Luke, you are an Army veteran. You served in Desert Storm.
Yes.
Thank you. I wonder what you can tell us about how you got involved with having a service dog.
The VA gave me a prescription for a service dog, said it'd be 4 to 6 years and good luck. But here's two organizations out of St. Louis that provide dogs for free. I called the first one. They said the dog is completely free for 100% disabled vets. I said, great. They said, but we want you to raise $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So I called the second one. They said that the dog is free. We want you to raise $20,000. So I came home. I was a little discouraged, to say the least. My wife and I watched Dogs of War on A&E, mm-hmm. and there's a vet down in New Mexico that has the same situation. Mm-hmm. And I called them. They said, come down for 6 weeks. We'll send you home with the dog. I can't be away from my doctors that long. So he said, you're in the same boat I was. Buy a puppy, pay to have it trained. So we did that. A service dog, I know firsthand, goes for between $15,000 and $25,000.
Wow.
I'm 100% disabled vet on unemployability. They don't let me work anymore. So I told my wife we can't afford it. She said we can't afford not to do it, so we did it. And that's when I started getting involved with service dogs. We're based out of the Tom Rose Dog School in High Ridge, Missouri. People come from all over the world to become professional dog trainers there. The students train their dogs for free. I get all the dogs donated for free. And we're one of the only organizations that when we started, we made an agreement that not a penny goes to a human. There's no need. If you're in it for the money, it sounds rude, but we don't need you. If you're volunteering, your heart is in it, and you give it your all.
So Dogs That Help provide service dogs to veterans and others in need?
Yes. So far, we've placed 17 dogs with disabled veterans. We've been, which really doesn't sound like a big number, but we've only been...
When it talks about, it sounds like a really complicated process when you talk about the cost and the training that's involved.
It is, and we're only 2.5 years old. So that takes a lot. It usually takes most organizations a year to year and a half to train a dog.
And Luke, have you always been a dog person?
I grew up hunting. We had rabbit dogs growing up. We had beagles. But till I got back from combat, I really didn't have a house dog.
And how has Nita helped you?
Oh, my God. I'm here talking to you. There's times in my life I wouldn't go grocery shopping unless it was the middle of the night. I got out of scouting.
Because of being around people?
Yep.
Okay.
Now.
And this was after your service, when you came back?
This was after I came back. Well, I'm CEO for Dogs That Help. I'm the chairman for Veterans Promise Kept PTSD Ride. I run a Lewis and Clark site. Since I can't work, I volunteer, and I'm a scout leader again.
Mm.
So it's, people keep saying, oh, so she changed your life. It's like, no, she gave me my life back.
Wow. When you think about what goes into training dogs like Nita, what is the process?
Luckily, I don't have to train them. The students at the school train them for us. My involvement is I get the dogs donated. I go and I give each service dog has to pass 5 to 7 intelligence tests before we even consider them. And then they come out to the school. They spend 4 months in basic and advanced obedience training. Then we place them with a veteran for 1 to 2 months so they can bond with their veteran. Then they come back, and we don't just do PTSD dogs. Since we have the facility and the students that are fantastic, Nita is for PTSD, depression, and mobility. My buddy Jesse's dog is for PTSD, depression, and his diabetes. We have a gentleman, a Vietnam vet with Parkinson's, that's going to be receiving a dog from us. I mean, no matter what your affliction is, we can train dog to take care of it.
I'm speaking with Luke Reinhold, the CEO of Vet Liaison Dogs That Help.
Dogs That Help.
And Luke, for Dogs That Help, what's your hope here at the State Fair?
Oh, my goodness. We were here last year. We raised money because we run on donations and fundraisers. But the important thing is, last year I had 2 veterans come up in need. They filled out their applications. They both have service dogs from us now.
Mm.
I got a call. In fact, one of the young men that came, I won't say his name, but he came up on Monday smiling with a new girlfriend. He's changed his life. He gets out of the house now. He's actually, in his words, he said, I'm functioning like a human being.
Mm.
So that's all we ask.
And I wonder, do you think enough people know that this is available for them, particularly when we're thinking about military veterans?
No, ma'am. It took a lot of years till I was... Growing up with our generation, we grew up and we saw Seeing Eye Dogs for the Blind. That was it. Just in the last 10 or 15 years, they've unlocked what dogs can truly do. They have dogs that can sniff cancer. A friend of mine has a dog that has saved his life 3 times. He had blood clots. The dog went and found his wife, brought her back. One time was at the VA hospital. He was in the bathroom. He fell. They had to shock him to get him back.
Mm.
I mean, dogs are just amazing. Other than the companionship, little things people don't understand. If I drop something, a dog can pick it up. There's a gentleman with a Chihuahua at the VA. He's wheelchair bound. He only has 1 hand. He does demonstrations for kids waiting with their parents. He threw a handful of change on the floor, on the towel floor, and the dog got down and picked every single one up and handed it to him.
Wow, there's so much that they can do. We will have more information at our website about Dogs That Help. I want to thank Luke Reinhold, who's the vet liaison with Dogs That Help. Luke, thanks so much for being here with us as we wrap up the show. And you were at Conservation World at the State Fair, right?
We're at Conservation World behind the log cabin.
All right. Thanks so much for that. Luke, I want to thank all of our guests for the show today and all of the folks who went into producing our State Fair show. Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, Alan Montesilio. You can't do these shows without a lot of engineering and technical support. I want to thank Lily Duncanson, Kevin Coogan, Rick Finney, Alex Coleman, all of the folks here at the 21st. We are a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a good day. I'm Nyla Boodoo.